This is On Shifting Ground. I'm Ray Suarez. In 2019, just a year after Jair Bolsonaro had taken office in Brazil, Neil Weinberg co-authored a piece for Bloomberg News titled, "The NRA Goes International on Its Mission to Defend Guns." In the article, Neil describes how foreign backers and international markets have become more integral to the NRA's growth strategy. When photos of Jair Bolsonaro's son, Eduardo, attending NRA events in the U.S. popped up on Twitter, and reports of Russian operative Maria Butina's relationship with NRA officials swirled on the internet, it wasn't hard to see the organization, Donald Trump's single biggest campaign donor in 2016, had its sights set abroad. But after years of tumultuous leadership, legal issues, and decreasing membership at home, what does the NRA's future look like for life outside the U.S.? Neil Weinberg of Bloomberg News joins me now. He's been covering the National Rifle Association extensively for years, looking at its domestic challenges and its ongoing attempts at international reach. Welcome to On Shifting Ground.
My pleasure.
When you work on NRA-related stories, is the organization transparent under the terms of its incorporation in New York State, under reporting requirements for expenditures? Does it have to tell you about its efforts to extend its reach abroad, or is it tough to ferret out the details?
Well, the details are perhaps a little bit tricky to ferret out, but the NRA has made no secrets of its support for some individuals or organizations overseas. Also on its website, it talks about its largest corporate donors, and the largest of those on its own website is a Brazilian gun manufacturer. So there's no secrets there. Like many large organizations, there's perhaps a limit to how deeply outsiders can dive into the details. But broadly speaking, it's not making a secret of its mutual support for those overseas and the ideological and financial support it receives from some organizations and people outside the United States.
The NRA's foray into Russia, which featured the Zelig of influence ops, the woman that launched 1,000 selfies with Republican luminaries Maria Butina, brought a lot of attention to the NRA's overseas efforts. Are there other examples you can give us of the places the organization sees as promising future fields?
Well, I don't know that the NRA, particularly now that it's facing significant financial strains at home, I don't know that it's looking to expand into branches overseas. It is sort of a uniquely Second Amendment United States-based organization. But certainly on a financial level and on an ideological level, it has expressed its cooperation with others overseas. Perhaps most notably is the former president of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, who has very strongly supported the NRA and gun rights. In addition, a country which sort of has an opposite narrative arc is Australia. In the 1990s, after a horrific mass shooting in Australia, that country put restrictions on many sorts of guns of many types. And as a result, those who have been supporting gun rights in Australia have sort of been back on their heels. And the NRA has certainly expressed its support for their cause, although in Australia, the restrictions on guns have largely reduced gun violence and have generated a lot of popular support.
Well, you mentioned the Second Amendment. It's the one aspect of American law which makes the playing field here so different from other places in the world. It puts the firearm in a different legal category from the way it exists in other countries. What's the point of these international initiatives if the legal foundation just isn't there for widespread gun ownership?
Well, obviously, the United States is sort of unique. We have our Second Amendment, which discusses the right to bear arms. It is also the largest market in the world for this industry. However, there are, to greater and lesser extents, rights to bear arms in other countries. And when Bolsonaro was president in Brazil, he relaxed the gun laws there so that it became easier for average Brazilians to own guns. There's also the industry element to this whole discussion and the fact that U.S. manufacturers would love to sell more guns overseas and foreign manufacturers would love to sell more guns in the United States. So to the extent that gun rights are expanded, whether under the Second Amendment in the U.S. or under different laws in other countries, obviously this all helps gun manufacturers sell more guns.
Is Jair Bolsonaro an even better representative, ambassador for gun culture than Donald Trump? I mean, you never see Donald Trump with a gun. There's no picture of him as there was with Charlton Heston holding up a musket over his head. Jair Bolsonaro is a right-wing military man who made his national reputation in quite a different way from the sort of luxurious, gold-plated lifestyle of the owner of Trump Tower.
That is true. And to your point, Bolsonaro has been very out front in having a video of him with guns, shooting guns at a Florida range. There are T-shirts that show him surrounded by automatic weapons or semi-automatic weapons. So he has very much affiliated himself with the gun rights movement. To Donald Trump, obviously, this appears more as a political support. He appears, as usual, in his suit, perhaps with a bright red tie, on a podium at the NRA convention. You don't see Donald Trump at a firing range, you know, blasting away with an M16 or an AK-47.
Are there places in the world where they've made attempts to make inroads and they've just been rebuffed, where people just say, look, we know what you're about and we're just not interested?
Well, the one that comes, you know, most obviously to mind is Australia. And as unfortunately we know all too well in the United States, often automatic or semi-automatic weapons, assault rifles, are used in mass shootings. And this has become an ongoing tragedy in the United States that we express our frustration about. But obviously on the federal level, on the state level as well, there hasn't really been any legal or legislative response. In Australia, by contrast, after a mass shooting in the 1990s, there was a fairly rapid and strong response, which limited access to assault weapons. So this has been a case where, while there are supporters of gun rights in Australia, I think the popular sentiment is that restrictions have worked and there's no real initiative to reverse that at this point.
Is the NRA good at taking no for an answer? I mean, there have been attempts to throw open the door a little wider in places like Britain as well. Do they just keep at it or do they just move on looking for greener pastures?
I think at least at this point, the NRA has as much as it can handle to deal with here in the United States. As we have written about recently, it's facing a number of major legal and financial hurdles. Its revenues have been in decline. Its legal expenses have been dramatically increasing. It's had to lay off people. It's had to reduce the number of programs which it is promoting for gun owners. And this is sort of twofold. One is the scandals which have unfolded involving senior executives at the National Rifle Association related to the use of the group's finances, and also COVID, of course. This is an organization which traditionally has had a lot of in-person events, and it hasn't been able to conduct those over the last few years. So both of those have sort of dealt it financial blows and have caused it to sort of reduce its operations and to focus more closely on the core.
Well, catch us up on the state of play in New York State. The attorney general there has investigated the organization's finances, found what she says is serious wrongdoing, along with just plain old embarrassing revelations about the way the NRA spends its members' dues, the river of cash flowing into the coffers. has, according to Letitia James, funded a lavish lifestyle for its leaders and staff. Has this hurt the NRA, not only on the bottom line, but in its messaging, what it says to its members its dues are for?
This has unquestionably hurt the National Rifle Association. It has shown up in its membership, and it has certainly shown up on message boards by gun owners, a number of whom have expressed in their messages things like, I'm not going to pay any dues to this organization until they clean house, until their leader, Wayne LaPierre, is gone. So there certainly has been frustration among some subset of gun owners, and potentially this has hurt their membership significantly. At the same time, it's sort of hard to predict how a lawsuit is going to unfold, but for now, this lawsuit has been underway for roughly 2 years. There have been related lawsuits, included a attempted effort by the National Rifle Association to declare bankruptcy. That case was thrown out of a federal court in Texas. So they're back in New York fighting with Letitia James. The judge in the case in New York has told Letitia James that she will not be able to dissolve the National Rifle Association as a remedy if she prevails in her lawsuit. However, as this case unfolds in court, it is costing the National Rifle Association tens of millions of dollars in legal costs, and the outcome is uncertain. It is entirely possible that at the end of this case, which could go on for many more months, that the senior leadership of the National Rifle Association could come under pressure in court to resign. Clearly, they are trying to hang tough until this blows over. And Wayne LaPierre has maintained support of his 76-member board. And so within the senior leadership of the National Rifle Association, Wayne LaPierre is currently secure. And they are arguing that, yes, mistakes were made in the past, but the wrongdoers have left and the mistakes that occurred previously have been corrected, and that it is time for the National Rifle Association to move on under current management. Letitia James is arguing that the wrongdoing was so serious and the remedies have been so weak that she would like to continue pursuing this in court and potentially remove the management, even if the judge has made it clear that he is not going to allow the dissolution of the National Rifle Association, which is a nonprofit chartered in New York with somewhere between 4 and 5 million members. So it is a large organization.
Is part of their momentum, forward momentum, let's say, a result of them being the only game in town? You mentioned they have between 4 and 5 million members. If people wanted to start a new NRA to replace this old one because of a loss of credibility, it's not like there's a waiting organization to become the new vessel for the energy of organized gun enthusiasts in this country. Is it possible that the NRA stays afloat in part because those interests need there to be an NRA and they're just going to hang in until the worst is over?
I think it's fair to say that there really is no replacement for the National Rifle Association. There are other gun rights groups. Some of them are more militant than the NRA is, but there are none that have anywhere near the scale that the National Rifle Association does. And while those who follow the NRA through the national media would think of it perhaps as a political organization or an organization that is centered around Wayne LaPierre, it is much larger than that. It has local groups around the country. It has a nonprofit called the NRA Foundation. It has, during non-COVID times, hundreds upon hundreds of dinners to raise money to, you know, sort of rally the troops, to give people an opportunity to get together with like-minded gun owners and gun rights supporters. So it is a grassroots organization. It has a lot of safety programs. It has programs for kids. It has programs for women. And there it really is no gun rights organization that, you know, at the snap of your fingers could replace the National Rifle Association.
Have the group's recent public relations problems, both in New York State courts, but also in its response after particularly heartbreaking or heinous gun crime in the United States, does the tight association with Republican politicians in the House and Senate show any signs of softening, any signs of weakening? Have any elected officials even inched away a little bit or said they want to take a wait and see about the relationship in the future? Or is that relationship just as strong as it's ever been?
I think it has remained as strong as it has ever been. And as followers of gun rights and gun legislation know, there was a significant Supreme Court decision last year. But beyond that, you know, on the legislative level, very little is happening on the federal level. I think that the NRA is clearly lost a significant amount of its initiative and strength since perhaps its peak in 2016, when its fundraising was at its peak, where its political clout was at its peak with its support of Donald Trump's candidacy. It has taken a severe financial and legal hit since then. The question is, how is all this going to shake out? I think one possibility is that it will muddle along through its legal troubles. And as it does so, it seems like its financial problems are only getting worse. However, at the end of this, Wayne LaPierre is in his 70s. It is entirely possible that at some point in the near term or the slightly longer term, the National Rifle Association will come under new management. And when it comes under new management, I think a key question is whether it will continue to become an increasing focus of the cultural wars in this country, or whether it might steer more toward its core operation, its traditional operation of supporting gun rights and kind of keeping out of other political debates. Certainly, there are a lot of gun owners in the United States who are not Republicans. So there are a lot of Democratic gun owners, and they might be turned off. They may be turning off millions of potential members through their very outspoken alliance with one political party and their distaste for the other. So if they were to get back to their core of supporting gun rights, I think that that could potentially result in a major sort of realignment of its priorities and a significant realignment of how the public perceives the National Rifle Association.
Neil Weinberg, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining us on Shifting Ground.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
In the interest of full transparency, we thought it would be worth mentioning that Michael R. Bloomberg, the founder of Bloomberg News, is a donor to groups that support gun safety, including Every Town for Gun Safety. You've been listening to On Shifting Ground, produced in partnership with KQED, with funding from listeners like you. Today's episode was produced by Matteo Schimpf and Andrew Stelzer. It was mixed and mastered by Matteo Schimpf. Additional production and engineering were provided by Rob Spate. KQED's Jim Bennett is our technical supervisor. Jared Sport is our executive producer. Philip Yun is CEO of World Affairs. Our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Ray Suarez. Thanks for listening.